You're listening to another great Torah class, recorded by TorahAnytime.com.
First aspect of Hanukkah. In most Tzor, in the last line of the fifth stanza, B'nei vino yemei shmoino kovu shere ranonim. I'll consider the entirety of this line soon. But first is B'nei vino. Bino is meivin dova mitoch dova. Das is knowledge. A person learns. A maven is a person that knows how to apply that knowledge. He looks at something complex and he understands the complexity based on his knowledge. But it's not something that he's directly learned. It's applied knowledge. That's Bino. So, the Paitan writes that the establishment of Hanukkah was B'nei Vino, Yirat Havana, depth of understanding. It was not a simple matter. And it's at many different levels true. It's true in the establishment of Hanukkah itself. The Gemara says a very peculiar thing that we cleared the Mikdash, we came to the Mikdash, we rededicated it, we lit the menorah, it burned for 8 days. The Shana, a year later, they established Hanukkah. Now, as the Maral of Prague asks, it would seem from the Alanisim itself, and perhaps the way he understands the Gemara as well, that the cause of the enactment of Hanukkah was the victory in the Milchama, not the Ness of the Menorah. Come back to perhaps why that's the case. But they won the war now. So what did they need Lashonah next year? We won a war that we didn't expect to win. And we should make a Yontov. But it took them a whole year to decide. So the Maharami Prague tells us that in their initial assessment of the war, they didn't see anything unusual. They didn't see anything to make a yontif about. A yontif, a chag, should mark something that's l'mayla midarach ha-teba, out of the natural order. And they didn't see anything out of the natural order. And that's rather remarkable. In Alanisim, what do we say? Rabim biad ma'atim, giborim biad chaloshim. There are two indices by which we measure an army. As Douglas MacArthur said, only a madman would want to get into a land war on the Asian continent with China. Just the sheer number of people that they have, who could put up an army, no matter how big and massive, that could withstand them? They just endlessly send troops after you. So that's Rabbah. Gibor has to do with training, leadership, morale, equipment. So some armies are not massively big, but they're extremely professional and extremely well armed with the most sophisticated of weapons. If you manage to have both of those factors on your side, numbers plus quality of troops, you're usually guaranteed to win the war. Usually. If quality is on one side and numbers on the other, it's an interesting war. And the probability is that the Second World War was such a war. The Germans, Yimach Shemam, were the most professional soldiers by far. They had the best equipment by far. but they were fighting the whole world. The combined weight of England, United States, and Russia eventually wore them down and destroyed them. The massiveness of the numbers of the people that were fighting with did them in finally. Here, as the Hashmonai approached the war, they were much smaller in size than the forces that Antiochus could muster, and much less professional. And yet they won the war. But they didn't think anything was remarkable about it. Yeah, of course, everything in the world is the Rabbeinu Shalom, but this is in keeping with Teva, the natural order of things. So the Maharal says, what alerted them that this wasn't the case is after they saw the nest of the Menorah, they saw that the Rabbeinu Shalom's hand is present in a supernatural sense. So this gave them pause, and they re-examined what they thought about the war, and they decided that the war was also a supernatural event. And that's only first next year, after Hanukkah was over this year, that they enact it as a permanent chag. A person looks at the world, he sees something wondrous, and yet we have the ability to absorb it all as Derech HaTeva. Our mindset is Alpi Derech HaTeva. We live in this world Alpi Derech HaTeva. When there's a farmer plant, at the beginning of the rainy season, that's when he plants. Why? Because the normal order of the world is when you plant at that time, you succeed. There are some times, though, that you would be better off planting a different time. But we can't anticipate that. So all we can do is go with the flow. So we do our analysis in terms of Derech HaTeva. If I go to open a store, so where do I open it? If I open it off some old, unused highway, which used to be the superhighway in 1920, but has been rebuilt twice, and the new superhighway is 10 miles away, and this has a few country passes by that pass by a day, I'm not going to open a business there because it doesn't look like I'm likely to succeed. I'll look for a place that lies along the new superhighway because there are a lot of Ivrim Vishavim, a lot of passes by. Yeah, sometimes you can get lucky. You open in this side place and for some reason somebody decides to put something over there, builds a factory next door to you because it's cheap land, and you have 5,000 people working there, you can't keep up with the business. But it's not where you build your business. So we operate in this world, Alpi Derech HaTeva. We get so used to operating Alpi Derech HaTeva that we don't see beyond that. It's all we see. And everything we try as much as possible to put back into that box of analysis, stuff it in, that it fits, the world proceeds in its natural order. Only when we contemplate that which goes on around us deeply, and we observe very, very carefully, can we see oftentimes Yad Hashem. It's not so obvious. There's B'nai Vina, the Maharal tells us. The enactment of Hanukkah itself, the entire Chag, only came from deep insight. The superficial perspective, nothing here. It's another event. Yeah, the sunrise, the sunset, that's also the Rabbeinu Shalom, but we don't make a chag because of that. Like a chag of something is unusual. Unusual. There was nothing unusual. So that was B'nai Vina. B'nai Vina in another sense. And the question is, why we have 8 days of the Chag? Why don't we just have seven? L'chor, the Nes was only a seven-day miracle. Right? There was 1 day of oil. I mean, there is a text in the Gemara which states, I think the text of the Shultas, if I recall, which states that there wasn't even enough oil for 1 day. that, according to that, the oil that they found, why did have chasam oshakai and godel? It was not the oil maker for the Migdash. But the Kohen Gadol had to bring them in Cheschavitin every day. So this was oil that the Kohen Gadol prepared under his hashkocha for his carbon that he had to bring. In the carbon Chavitin, and the Minchas Chavitin, there were only 3 leg of Shemen. Each cup, you needed 3.5 leg to light the whole menorah. So there wasn't, that text has that there was not even enough oil even for one day. So according to that text, we understand why there are 8 days. But according to the text that we have in the Gemara, that there was enough oil for one day. So this is probably the most famous kasha about Hanukkah. The Beis Yosef already raised this problem. And there are endless answers to it. The simplest of the answers is that one day marks the war, the victory in the war. And the rest of the day is marked what was miraculous about the menorah. So therefore we understand b'nei vina. It was not obvious that we should have 8 days. If we looked at it superficially, we should have a 7-day chag. There were 7 days of miracles. But if we understand that only through depth, our perception of the depth of the events, that we realize that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam was the one that engineered this victory for us, it was a specialness, and that's b'nei vina. Yimei Shmoina kavu shirah anonim. They made an 8-day festival. It's not apparent that it should be an 8-day festival. The question is, what do we thank the Rabbeinu Shel Olam for on Hanukkah? We say there were 2 things which took place. There was victory in war. There was the nest of the menorah. Now, remarkably, if we look at the Alanisim, the Alanisim tells us in the war, this is a great event that took place. When it comes to the nest of the menorah, it's blasé. They came of all the Dir Besecha, Vachakachid Likuneros Machachos Kachacha, Vachakabu Shamos and Hanukkah, Eil, Odus Allah Shem Chagob. Nary a mention of the Nest of the Menorah. What happened? What happened? Where did it go? There are 2 ways to look at it. I think they're quite similar to each other. I found, I have my own Mahalach, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita has a Mahalach, which is very similar to mine, slightly differently tweaked. Slightly differently. In Brisk, they say the following. The Gemara talks about Brichas Shevach v'Hido. So, Shevach and Hido are 2 different things. The Asa Brisk says, Shevach means to appreciate the greatness of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. It may, in fact, not have personal impact upon me. If I examine all the pictures of the Hubble Space Telescope, and I appreciate the vastness of the universe, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is a remarkable world. Look at this phenomenal world that Rabbeinu Shel Olam made. It doesn't impact my life too much. Well, some nice, interesting pictures, but that's where it ends. Nothing changed in my life. I get up and live tomorrow after I look at the pictures in the Hubble Space Telescope the same as I live today in terms of my own real life. Nothing changed. But I have a new appreciation of the vastness of the universe, of the greatness of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam made this world. Yeah. That's Shevach. Haidah is personal. What did I gain from that which took place? You went out of Mitzrayim? Yesterday I was an Eved. Today I'm free. Yesterday I was persecuted. Today, I live in joy and happiness, freedom. That's how you do. That's not distant and abstract. That's me. And so I said simply It could even be that the doer of the that was saved from the Yevonim, they didn't sing praises of Haidah because of the nest of the menorah. The nest of the menorah, they did a mitzvah, but did not materially change their lives. There was no material benefit from it. The nest of the Muhammad was material benefit. Yesterday I had a Greek overlord, and today I rid myself of him. I'm a free man, as the Rambam writes. We restored our independence. I began to restore our independence. We restored the sanctity of the Mikdash. We lived as free men, as sovereign people. That's meaningful. That affected me. That's the way I see it. So therefore, the Nes of the Menorah, Al-Anisim, is where it's in Maidah. It's a Baruch of Haidah. Haidah is what I benefited from. The Nes of the Menorah I didn't benefit from. It's the way I saw it. Chaim Kanevsky is very, very similar. He says perhaps even that they did benefit from the Nes of the Menorah. I would presume it means to say that it gave them greater confidence that the Rabbeinu Shalom was with them, seeing that. So there was a material gain. They were in the middle of a war. The war wasn't finished. So they had a new air of confidence to them that they would succeed in this enterprise because they saw the Rabbeinu Shalom's hand. So he would feel that they gave Haidah for both. He says, we though, today, the Nes of the Menorah doesn't do anything for us. The nest that our forefathers were saved, yeah, that's something. A person comes to a place where his father had a bracha, so while he was saved with Derech Nes, he also makes a bracha. Well, if my father wasn't saved, where would I be? So where he was saved is also it's Yeshua for me too. So the salvation from the Greeks benefited all of the posterity of the Jewish people. But the Yisrael is the same. Haidah is a very personal dimension. You have to feel personal benefit from it. So Hanukkah was the personal dimension of Haidah. There are differing texts in Al Anisim. Tosis and Megillah cites a text that they offered a tefillah at the end of Al Anisim, that just as the Rabbeinu Shel Olam did Nisim for our forefathers, similarly he should intervene on our behalf. Which is really the message of the Baruch Hashem Nisim Rabba saying, Bayomi Mohim, Baz Bazman Hazeh. The Bazman Hazeh implies, as the Maral often writes, that this time is stamped in our history is a time of Yeshua. So it was at this time of the year, by Yom, yesteryear, but Bazman Hazeh, from the time starting from Chafei Kislev, that Yeshua emerged. So this remains a time of Yeshua for Klal Yisrael. The Chag is a time of Yeshua. There. But it's deep. It's not only we mispalel because it was a time of Yeshua. That's one aspect of the tefillah. It's a time of Yeshua. It's a good time to be mispalel. But this text actually put it into the bracha of, into the Al Anisim, the bracha of Haidah. And the reason for that is, so the question is, do we have bakoshes in the first three and the last three brachas? Even though on Yom HaNorom we do have in the first bracha of Shmoneh Esrei, it's Achreinu L'Chaim, which is a request, and in the last two brachas of Shmoneh Esrei, B'Sefer Chaim. So there are those that want to say that for the Rabbim you're allowed to have such tefillas. Eich sheyiyeh, but the one is Chois that had this. But there's a deep, it's not only because it's Zman, Bayom Mahim Bazman Hazeh, but there's another aspect too. In the end of Shiraz David, it's one of the most amazing things. Al kein oyidcha Hashem bagoyim u'leshimcha azamer magdil Yeshua is malka ibeis chesed l'mshicha l'dovid l'zaro adaylam. From Sefer Shmuel, Shiras David. How do we understand the final psukim? Al kein oyidcha Hashem bagoyim u'leshimcha azamer. So that we understand it's the end of a lengthy shira, and he says, "I will sing the praises of the Rebbeinu Shlomo." That's befitting. He thanked the Rebbeinu Shlomo for saving him from Shaul and from all his enemies. David HaMelech had no shortage of enemies in his life. No shortage. But what's the next pasuk? Magdil Yeshua Smalko was a chesed of Shicha. How does that follow? To intensify Yeshua Smalko. So, the Malbim writes that commensurate with the Hidah, the thanksgiving that we express to the Rabbeinu Shalom, we receive a renewed and invigorated ability to be mispalo. And therefore, after David HaMelech gave his daughter to the Rabbeinu Shalom, he reached a new plateau of Tvila, a new platform for Tvila. And therefore, we can ask, Magdil Yishuvah Yismalka, Yiveis HaChesed M'shicha, Medavid HaDezaro Ad Eilam, that intensify the chesed that you do for me. And it stems from the fact tefillah, the whole notion of tefillah. What is the notion of tefillah? The notion of tefillah should give us great pause. Why do we ever ask someone for something in this world? For a number of reasons. First of all, maybe they don't know that I need something, so I have to tell them that I need it. Even if they do know, maybe they're not inclined to help me. Perhaps if they realized how significant and important it was, they would help me. And even if after all of that, they still don't want to help me, well, maybe I'll get under their skin and they'll just want to get rid of me. So they'll do what I want just to get me off their back. So these are all reasons that we go to people and we ask them for favors. But none of them apply to the Rabbeinu Shalom. The Rabbeinu Shalom doesn't need me to inform him what I need. He knows better than I do what I need. If I'm deserving of it, the Rabbeinu Shalom will give it to me. If I'm not deserving of it, I'm not going to get it. And I can't get under the Rabbeinu Shalom's skin. So what am I asking him for anything for? For what reason? So Chovos HaLevavos writes that the reason that I asked the Rabbeinu Shalom for something is it increases my focus and my understanding of my dependence on the Rabbeinu Shalom. I want to be healthy. How am I going to be healthy? It only comes from the Rabbeinu Shalom. I want parnasa, barei chaleinu. I want wisdom. I'd like to do tshuva. The realization that for everything I'm dependent on the Rabbeinu Shalom. That's the schus that we have. And we attempt to intensify our understanding of our dependence on the Rabbeinu Shalom through tefillah. And that's the schus that we have. Now, from that standpoint, Hidah is greater than Bakasha. When I ask the Rabbeinu Shalom for something, it's a very abstract experience. The Rabbeinu Shalom Lahavdil is abstract. That which I want is abstract. I need parnasa, I need health, whatever. It's not here. It's an abstraction. I want the Rabbeinu Shalom to bring that abstraction into reality. But it's an abstraction. Chaydah is after the fact that the Rabbeinu Shalom has given it to me. That's concrete. I want to tell me, here it is. I can put my hands on it. I'm holding it. It's no longer an abstraction. Hidah is the greatest acknowledgement of our dependence on the Rabbeinu Shalom. It transcends Bakasha. And that's why what the Malba means, that when we reach forth to the Rabbeinu Shalom with Hidah, with thanksgiving, we have a new schus. It's a new level of our appreciation of the greatness of Hashem. And from that standpoint, I'm at a new level. I can put forth a new bakasha to the Rabbeinu Shalom. So that's also part. When we said the whole Alanisim, and we appreciate that which the Rabbeinu Shalom has done for us, now I can turn around and ask of the Rabbeinu Shalom, well, just as I thank you for all of those wonderful things you did in yesteryear, it would be really beautiful if we could get a few of them nowadays. So that's also an aspect. It's an aspect of the Haidah that we give to the Rabbeinu Shalom. And the Haidah plays a very, very significant role in places that are surprising. David HaMelech wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Rabbeinu Shalom told him, he can't build the Beis HaMikdash. Why not? Because David HaMelech was a person whose life was filled with warfare. And therefore, he epitomized the koyach of din in the world. He could not build the Beis HaMikdash, which has to be a place of racham. So the Rabbeinu Shalom said, the one that's fit to build it, is Shlomo HaMelech, will know peace in his lifetime. So Amela, his midah could be Rach Chesed Baracham. And that's what we need to build the Beis HaMikdash. So David HaMelech could not build the Beis HaMikdash. But David HaMelech was not defeated in his quest. David HaMelech was wise and insightful. Each day in Hanukkah, what do we say? As the Yayim, Mizmor Shir Hanukkah Sabayis L'David. So who wrote the Mizmor for Hanukkah Sabayis? David HaMelech wrote the Mizmor for Hanukkah Sabayis. David HaMelech did not live to see the Hanukkah Sabayis, but David HaMelech wrote the Mizmor for Hanukkah Sabayis. And what do we say in most Torah about that? Was Egmor B'Shir Mizmor Chanukas HaMizbeach. When the Rabbeinu Shalom cleared the enemy away from the Mikdash at the time of Hanukkah, was Egmor B'Shir, I will complete B'Shir Mizmor with what a Shir of Mizmor Chanukas HaMizbeach. The culmination of the Chanukah of the Mizbeach is Oz Egmor B'Shir Mizmor. It's the single daughter of the Rabbeinu Shalom. So David HaMelech's response to the Rabbeinu Shalom was, if I cannot build the Beis HaMikdash, so be it. But who will ultimately finish the consecration of the Beis HaMikdash? I will. Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis L'David. The Chanukah Sabayis is completed as Egmor B'Shir Mizmor. You have to have a Mizmor, a daughter of the Rabbeinu Shalom. And whose Mizmor is the Chanukah Sabayis? The David. David puts the final touch on the Mikdash and its dedication. He sings the Haidah that we have to sing to the Rabbeinu Shalom of the Mikdash. The Haidah is twofold. The Haidah is twofold. We had two levels of problem in Hanukkah. Or we'd say me bias or me chutz. Me chutz was Antiochus was aggressive. He pushed his agenda strongly, aggressively, and mightily. And he basically succeeded in conquering Eretz Yisrael and the Mikdash. So that's one problem that we dealt with. But a more difficult problem that we dealt with was the problem of bias. We had a significant number, perhaps a rove of the people in Klal Yisrael, or Misyafim. They were taken by the Greek philosophy and culture. And they began to live their life in this fashion. Right? We have the famous Ma'isel at the end of the Gemara in Sukkah, where a daughter of one of the heads of the Mishmoris comes. She married a Greek officer, and she comes to the Mizbeach. She kicks the Mizbeach, and she says, "Loikus, loikus, wolf, wolf. You take the money of Klal Yisrael, and you don't do anything for them. It's all useless what you have here." This was the zeitgeist. This is what prevailed in the era at that time. And this was indeed a more difficult problem, a much more difficult problem. Because problems with the chutz, eventually we can overcome. But problems with bias are much more difficult. You know, we don't have to have Rachmanis on the troops of Antiochus. What are we going to do? Destroy all our neighbors? What are we going to do? And this was, in fact, the part of the crisis of what Hanukkah was. Some, in fact, suggest that that's the meaning of the latter part of the Alanisa. Some suggest that that's not the problem of the chutz. We're no longer talking about the yavanim. Now we're talking about the in-house problem, the intramural problem that we had in our own community, that we had an uphill battle to restore Torah to its place. And the Rabbeinu Shalom allowed us to prevail ultimately in both. In both. Not only michutz, but be biased too. So someone suggests, or Yosha wants to suggest, that this lies at the heart of the machlekes of Beshamay and Besillel. Beshamay and Besillel have a machlekes about, should you start with 8 and go down to 1? Or should you start with 1 and go down up to 8? So he says it depends which problem you're dealing with. If you're dealing with the problems that they be bachutz, so as soon as the Kohen Gadol walked into the Beis HaMikdash and they sanctified the Beis HaMikdash, they achieved. This was the end. They chased the Yevonim out. So we start at full glory, with the full 8. In the war of the spirit, you can't achieve victory so quickly. It's a slow climb, step. Step by step by step going up. And therefore, this is the way to light. If you're representing the victory with bias, it's from 1 to 2 to 3, slow and incremental. It takes a long time until you get to the zenith. Because the question is, what perspective? Was the perspective, the principal perspective, on the external threat or the internal threat? And Beis Hillel was of the view that the internal threat, the threat in the spirituality of Klal Yisrael, was in fact far greater than all the other threats. And that could also be, there's a whole issue. In the Brisbane of Asorim, it says, V'hine eimo g'doylo chasheicha nofeles olof. So Chazal say that this refers to the Arba Golias. And it says, Chasheicha is the Golus of Yovan. The Shnayla is, why is this, what was particularly dark about the Golus of Yovan? We've had a lot of enemies, and some mighty, dangerous enemies in this world. Haman was a mighty and dangerous enemy, without any doubt. So why do we say that the Yovanim is Chasheicha's darkness? And perhaps this is the reason. Most of our enemies in history were enemies with bachutz. They didn't like us for different reasons. Whether they didn't like us racially. Haman, religion didn't play a role by Haman. The Nazis, Yimach Shemon, you know, that was peripheral. You know, they wanted to wipe that out too. But racially, they wanted to destroy the Jews. There are those that don't like our religion, so they want us to convert to their religion. But all of those remained ultimately as threats me bachutz. They did not gain traction with Bifnim. You know, we don't know at any point in history that there was really a significant movement towards mass conversion to the Catholic faith, despite all that person. Yeah, there were incidents that such things took place in history, undoubtedly. It's a very shocking and disturbing aspect of it. But overall, Klal Yisrael was affected, was not affected in Bifnim. And this remained all the way down. It's true until the current era too. Most Jews, if you try to force them to adopt the Christianity of some sort, kind, would absolutely resist. In the Holocaust, there were Jews in Czechoslovakia, and they were offered to be let out of a labor camp if they converted to Christianity. And there was one guy that used to try to persuade them. He was a Meshumet. And the guy that wrote it said, no, forget the Frum guys. The non-Frum, the totally non-Frum guys despised him and laughed at him. So, you know, I'm a Jew. Forget about it. Take a hike. So, but Yovan gained traction within Klal Yisrael. And that's what perhaps Chazal called it Chasheicha. This was the darkest of the difficulties that we faced. The others were principally problems with Bachutz, external challenges. External challenges on a religious basis, on a racial basis. Right? In the 20th century, we had the same thing. No Aleinu. The Germans, Yemach Shemam, their thing was race. You were from, you weren't from, you were a Kofer, you were not, you were a Catholic for three generations. Selish Kanaf Kamina. You're racially a Jew. Achas Dosu Lahomis. The communists, to the largest extent, I mean, Stalin at a certain point decided Stalin wants to murder all the Jews, and that's Baruch Hashem, that's when he died in 1953. He had a plot to murder 2 million Jews at that time. But principally, the communists, if you went with their philosophy, that's it, they didn't bother you. You know, except Stalin killed everybody, even the communists he killed. There was a different problem. But in terms of if you became a communist and you joined the Communist Party and you went with the flow, they didn't bother you. But if you didn't go with the flow, they killed you ruthlessly. So recently, the Rebbe in Kotler, Rishul Kotler, the Ashalom Roshnei, is Almona. So she said she lost 10 uncles in the Second World War. 5 were murdered by the Germans and 5 were murdered by the Russians. But all of these problems, wherever they came from, by and large remain problems mibachutz. They did not become internal issues in most situations. Yovan became an internal issue. Ibayas. And that's Chasheicha. That's the darkest of all exeris. If we're swept up by the philosophy and internally we're compromised, then we've reached the lowest of ebbs. So this was the challenge of Hanukkah. And it's interesting, it's the only yontif that we have which is not from the Torah Shabbat. Every other yontif is in Torah Shabbat. We have the Chagim and the Yom and the Rom and the Torah. We have Purim in Kisvei HaKodesh. Hanukkah is already in the second bias. At the very end of the beginning of the second bias was the end of Nevuah. At the very beginning of the second bias. And then it went on a little bit. In the end, slowly the Ruach HaKodesh ended. And by the time we got to the middle of the second bias, there was no Ruach HaKodesh either, what animated the Ksuvim. So Hanukkah is the one yontif which is totally not in Torah Shabbat. And that's always been a very, very significant aspect of the celebration of Hanukkah. So that means that Hanukkah is the one Chag, which is really the Chag of Torah Shebal Peh, not of Torah Shebiksav. There was no Torah Shebiksav, was closed already by that point. It's a Chag of Torah Shebal Peh. And the way to begin to look at this is when we finish an aliyah, the Torah, so we have a bracha that we don't make any other time. We have a bracha, the bracha that we make before the aliyah, asher bracha, when we make each morning. The bracha subsequent to the aliyah, asher nosa nono terasa mesam, chaya olam atabi sochein, we make only after an aliyah, we don't make it at the beginning. So the Torah Shulchan Aruch writes, what's the perush of this bracha? Asher nosan lonu teras emes, this refers to Torah Shebiksav. V'chaye oylam, nota b'sochenu, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave us the ability to be eternal. The greatest enigma in history, the survival of the Jew. What's it rooted in? It's v'chaye oylam, is nota b'sochenu, the Torah tells us, this is the Torah Shebal Peh. It's the koyach of the Torah Shebal Peh which allows us to be eternal. And there are many, many different aspects to it. It's a very simple aspect to it. An old Godel told me that the cardinal, or the archbishop of Nigeria, came to visit him a number of years ago. And he asked him the following, the cardinal of Nigeria. He said, what do you teach in your schools to convey your religion to the next generation? What's your teaching methodology? He says, we have a big problem. He says, the ancient texts don't resonate by our students. So the Adam Godel told him, if you come to our schools, they're animated, they're lively, and the entire discussion is about the ancient texts. So I was sitting with him at a simcha, and I said to this Adam Godel, Perush HaDvarim, I said, you're absolutely right, but Perush HaDvarim is the following. They have only Torah Shebiksav. They don't have Torah Shebal Peh accessible to them at any level. And consequently, they really don't know how to apply it to anything that goes on around them. It's some old story that took place. What are you supposed to take from it? What are you supposed to learn from it? How to apply it? They're in a fog. I said, we have the Torah Shebal Peh. I said, I'm going to ask you a question. I said, ask everyone in this room, when's the last time you went to a drosha on Shabbos? Anyways, I'm not talking about my style. You know, okay, so that's your style. Anyways, where the basic content of the drosha was a pasuk. Right. Almost invariably, there's a medrash, it's a rashi, a ramban, a gemar, something more than the pasuk, an interpretation of the pasuk that the Rav builds his drasha upon. He just doesn't build his drasha on a pasuk. Very rare. Very rare. Because our koyach is the koyach of Torah Shebal Peh. It's in the koyach of Torah Shebal Peh that we see the depth of the Torah. And we see how the Torah, in fact, relates to every situation. They have no means. They have no means of access to that. And therefore, they have a problem. They're right. You know, you're talking out the stories. What does that have to do with me? Where does it connect to me? Where's the lesson that connects to me? How do you connect it with me? They don't know the answer. I had dinner once on a Friday night with two Mormon galochim. Don't ask why, it was necessary. But I had dinner with two Mormon galochim, not in my house, somewhere else. But and so they wanted to know, they were fascinated, one of them, with Avraham Avinu, but he wanted to study Avraham in greater depth. So I took out a Chumash Makoros Gedolos, and I held it up to him, and I said, you know, look in the right-hand page. So over here in this corner is the text. The whole bottom half of the page and the whole next page is all commentary. I said, this is the most basic Bible that we use. And three quarters of it is commentary. I said, this is only the most basic commentaries. We have endless books to explore. what the Torah is about. So, our koyach is in the koyach of Torah Shema Upeh. That's what allows our Torah, and therefore us to be eternal. We have in every door, we have the connection with the Rabbanu Shalom. We see the Torah, how it lives, how it applies around to the situation around us. I mean, this is the very famous incident, and I'll end with that. In the end of 1977, or the beginning of 1978, there was a famous incident that there were Siamese twins born to a younger man in Lakewood. And when I know who it was, whatever, the grandfather of the Siamese twins was a long-time chaver of Meshver. From whatever they learned together in Mir, Meshver took care of him when he was ill in China. They were very close, good with each other. And he was a Rosh Hashanah in New York, and they had, so they went to the hospital that was supposed to be the major experts to deal with this problem, was a Catholic hospital in Philadelphia. So they have a Catholic hospital, so they have a board of ethics to decide what's ethical. You know, you just, Siamese twins are a grave ethical problem. Because if you feel as they felt in this case, that not both of them couldn't survive, and one's going to die, so how do you play God? So the Catholics made inquiry of who the rabbi of these Jewish patients in the hospital was. So they said Rabbi Feinstein of the Lower East Side of Manhattan. So when their higher ups heard that Rabbi Feinstein was going to decide what the ethics of the situation were, they said, it's fine, let Rabbi Feinstein decide. You know, we don't have to touch it. I mean, they understood full well that they could make up a Baba Maisa story, but to really understand the ethics of it, they had no means of doing it. On what basis are they going to come to a conclusion? What's right? Ramosha had an interpretation which he had published decades before to deal with a Shvera Rambam and a Yushalmi, and that was the Yisaidus of that psak. But where did it come from? From the Torah Shebal Peh. From the, came from the Rambam's interpretation, came from a Yushalmi. That's what it was built on. Someone that comes without the Torah Shebal Peh, what's he know? What can he do with this case? Scratch his head? Charakas the yontif, it's Torah Shebal Peh. And the koyach of Torah Shebal Peh is the survival for posterity of Klal Yisrael. Chaksav.
TorahAnytime.com sends cameras out day and night to video and audio record the best Torah classes around. We then make them available to you for free. So what are you waiting for? Watch, listen to, and download lectures on TorahAnytime.com today.